QST from the American Radio Relay League, the ARRL National Association for Amateur Radio. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for July 11th, 2012. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. My script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB, in Laurel, Maryland. The Aries Audio e-letter report is a voice version of the Aries e-letter, which is compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. The Aries e-letter is available online at arrl.org/ares-el, or you may listen to the audio version at arrl.org/aries-e-letter-audio-version. Here's what we have for you this month. ARRL to host webinar on amateur radio response to the 2012 hurricane season on July 17th. Tropical Storm Debbie spawns severe weather and skywarn response. Colorado wildfires response. Minnesota flood of 2012, hams respond. Letters on upgrading. U.S. Virgin Islands section works with EMA and EOC. Sometimes we get noticed. Tips, DIY equipment labeling. Training, ARRL courses updated. And Rick Palm, K1CE, for a final. Now the news. ARRL to host webinar on amateur radio response to the 2012 hurricane season on July 17th. The ARRL will host a webinar from 8 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Tuesday, July 17th, to present information about the 2012 hurricane season and amateur radio response. The program will offer presentations from representatives from the National Hurricane Center, NHC, the amateur radio station at the NHC, WX4NHC, the VOIP Hurricane Net, the Hurricane Watch Net, HWN, and the ARRL. Webinar registration is open to all, but this informative web session will be of particular interest to those amateurs in hurricane-prone areas. If you are interested in emergency communications and hurricane preparedness and response, you are invited to attend this online presentation. To register for this webinar, please click on the secure link, https://www3.gotomeeting.com/register/472855454 with no spaces. Now let me repeat that URL. https://www3.gotomeeting.com/register/472855454. And again, there are no spaces. Tropical Storm Debbie spawns severe weather and skywarn response. On Sunday, June 24, 2012, Tropical Storm Debbie spawned severe weather in Pinellas County, Florida, particularly in the Pasa Grill area of St. Petersburg. The Pinellas County Skywarn Net was activated around 10:35 a.m. with the issuance of a severe thunderstorm warning. The net remained active at several different alert levels for just over 11 hours until 9:45 p.m. that evening. In all, 27 amateur radio operators checked into the net, and 4 operators who rotated duties as the net control. The most significant event occurred in the evening when one of the 10 tornadoes spawned by Debbie touched down in southern Pinellas. At about 8:14 p.m., a tornado warning was issued for Pinellas County. Weather radar indicated a tornado near Fort DeSoto Park was moving north. The net was immediately moved from standby to code red, which means severe weather is imminent. At 8:23 p.m., Jack Satterfield, W4GRJ, reported that multiple electrical transformers were blowing in the Paso Grille area. He also advised that his son's house, located just south of his location, had a window blown out. This report was relayed to the NWS within 1 or 2 minutes. The NWS put this report in a severe weather statement that was released shortly afterward. Mr. Satterfield made follow-up reports of roofs torn off of a couple of buildings and power lines down in Paso Grille, all of which were relayed to NWS. Post-storm surveys by the NWS indicated an EF1 tornado with winds of 80 to 85 miles per hour had touched down in Paso Grille at 8:21 p.m. and lifted at 8:25 p.m. The tornado had a path length of 3.3 miles and a width of 50 yards. The tornado actually started as a waterspout that moved on shore. Damage included a tourist rental building that had the top unit removed and destroyed. Fortunately, no one was in this top unit. When asked about the way the reports were passed on to the National Weather Service, Justin McBride, KJ4REU, the Pinellas Skywarn Coordinator, replied, "RNET maintained contact with the National Weather Service throughout the event using the NWS online chat system, which allows us to interact directly with the forecasters in real time and quickly relay reports received from our spotters." Mr. Justin added, "This event highlighted the unique ability of Skywarn amateur radio operators to get reports to the NWS well ahead of other sources. The reports of the tornado damage in southern Pinellas from the spotter located in Paso Grille were relayed to the NWS approximately 10 minutes before 911 and the media received and/or relayed the information." Asked to summarize the performance of the Skywarn spotters, Mr. McBride said, "Our Skywarn activation for Tropical Storm Debbie underscored the value of training, organization, and frequent practice in our program, which allowed us to respond effectively to the situation. Although the damage and injuries associated with this storm system were only minor to moderate, the event gave us additional experience, which will better prepare us for future, more severe events." We thank Kevin Poorman, KV4CT, the West Central Florida Public Information Coordinator, for this information. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for July 11, 2012. It's time now to pause for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. Colorado Wildfires Response. Thanks to an extremely dry season, portions of Colorado have been ravaged by wildfires. As of July 5th, only a handful of the fires are considered extinguished or fully contained, with the majority considered still active. Almost 170,000 acres are affected by 11 active fires. Since June 9th, hams in Colorado have been assisting with disaster communications, providing communication support to the state and served agencies. Minnesota Flood of 2012. Hams respond. Northeast and north-central Minnesota recently suffered one of its worst rainfall events in many years. As much as 10 inches of rain inundated this part of the state, and its effects will be felt for many years as recovery takes place. A powerful low-pressure area moved into the region from the Pacific Northwest on the heels of previous systems that had saturated the ground in the upper Midwest. Along with another moisture-laden front from the south, the stage for flooding was set. The National Weather Service had been warning of the potential for flash flooding in the days preceding the arrival of the system, and with the ground saturated, the potential became a reality as the area of low pressure moved slowly across the region on June 19th and June 20th. Torrential rainfall from severe thunderstorms that trained along the front caused havoc as many communities and counties were affected. Homes and businesses were flooded, and roads and bridges were either dangerously compromised or washed out by rushing floodwaters. Lake County Emergency Coordinator Jeff Nast, KC0MKS, reported that Northland Skywarn was activated from 1800 Zulu on June 19th until 0145 Zulu on the next day. Lake County Races Ares was also activated on June 20th to provide emergency communications for a fiber cable failure at the Knife River Expressway Bridge. Cook County officials requested disaster response communications for the hospital in Grand Marais. All communications were severed during the storm, and the hospital was without contact with the hospitals in Duluth. Pat Scully, N0WSI, made the request, and a communications response resulted. Jane Fingerman Johnson, N0UYQ of the Cook County Ares Response Team, CCART, reported, "We were without phone, cell, internet, and 911 service for approximately 12 hours. We set up our amateur radio station at the Cook County North Shore Hospital to provide communications to the outside world." Gary Hoogkirk, KD0DHB, Bob Schultz, KC0NFB, and Tom Kurtovich, KB0LSS, responded to the St. Louis County EOC in Pike Lake. Gary Hansen, KD0CVO, Dave Leslie, KC9MKJ, and Doug Nelson, AA0AW, activated the Douglas County, Wisconsin EOC to coordinate communications to Grand Marais, as well as for net control for a Duluth Superior net to record road closure information to help travelers trying to get through the area. Mr. Nast, KC0MKS, also reported, "We had people running net control from the Douglas County EOC and St. Louis EOC also manned. We also had a presence at the NWS during the net." Mr. Nast activated the EOC in two harbors for Lake County. Bob Hoyt, KC0EIM, and Grant Forsyth, KC0WUP, went up to the radio desk at the National Weather Service office in Duluth to become real-time providers of any weather information needed. Gary Hawkinson, W0ELH, set up and monitored 7.250 MHz single sideband as a backup. Bill Fleischman, KC0ZZL, located phone numbers for Life Flight to establish hardwire communications with them if needed. Ham Communicators handled closure information and a doctor replacement issue. Dave Miller, W0NWO, was instrumental in coordinating many facets of the response. Several local amateur operators went mobile and called in damaged areas to the net. A call for help came in from Minnesota Public Radio, MPR. One of their reporters had a relative living up the shore in two harbors, and hams were able to get her information so that her dad's medical supply service could get supplies to him. Thanks to the active participation by many local Ares members, a ready and capable multifaceted response resulted. Thanks to all operators who took time from their own issues to make amateur radio work in this time of need. While the severity and widespread magnitude of the flooding exceeded expectations, the hams were still able to meet the challenge. Once again, amateur radio proved itself as being the one reliable means of communication in a real emergency when all else fails. This report from the July 2012 issue of KD0CI's radio newsletter, written by Doug Nelson, AA0AW, with contributions by Jane Fingerman Johnson, N0UYQ, Kenny Bershovsky, KD0CI, and Jeff Nast, KC0MKS. Now, letters. First, on upgrading. Dale Williams, WA8EFK, ARRL Great Lakes Division Vice Director, wrote, "Thanks for the excellent commentary in the June Ares e-letter about license upgrading. In recent years, I have seen a large number of new hams join the hobby, specifically so they could become involved in disaster response work. They have become a valuable community asset, yet have limited themselves to the VHF-UHF frequencies in the false belief that only VHF-UHF frequencies are necessary in an emergency. Mike's article presents very convincing reasoning as to the need for these individuals to extend their capabilities by upgrading. Well done. More letters in a moment, but first we have to pause to allow repeaters to identify. This is the ARRL e-letter for July 11, 2012. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting. Repeater owners, please let us know if your repeater is airing the ARRL e-letter with an email to kz3ab@arrl.net. Please include the day, time, location, repeater call sign, frequency, and any sponsoring club. That email address again is kz3ab@arrl.net. Now, back to letters. Fred Kleber, K9VV, the ARRL USVI section manager in Gallows Bay Station, Christiansted, U.S. Virgin Islands, writes, "Thanks for the nice tribute to NP2B in the last Aries e-letter. It will be an honor to continue John's fine legacy. John and I have been working with the Virgin Islands Territorial Emergency Management Agency, also known as VITEMA, for a little over a year. We have built up their St. Croix EOC Comms Center from scratch. While the agency had most of the equipment, they needed assistance to assemble it and operate it. We were able to obtain leftover hardware and assistance from FEMA to assemble a fully functional MCOM center. We have been working closely with VITEMA management and the Virgin Islands National Guard. It just so happens that the VITEMA director is also a brigadier general in the Guard. We participate in the weekly FEMA HFNet, FNARS, and are in the process of organizing a weekly HFNet between key governmental agencies in the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. Last year, we activated for a couple of tropical storms that were in the area. Our goal is to continually push the bar higher and be even better prepared for another direct strike. Being on a small Caribbean island means that evacuation is much less of an option. This places a much greater importance on MCOM, as the bulk of our post-storm relief will come from off-island. I can tell you that my previous CERT, NHC, NIMS, ICS, and ARRL MCOM training has proven invaluable in this exercise." Our final letter, entitled "Sometimes We Get Noticed," comes from Steve Gulchett, WG0AT, in Monument, Colorado. "I wanted to share this story of interest to others who volunteer and support their communities in times of need. After recent major forest fires in the mountains above Colorado Springs, with the loss of several lives and with 350 homes lost, and a resulting 32,000 evacuees, flash flooding became our next urgent concern. Our local RACES team was activated by the sheriff's office to act as spotters for rising streams and possible flash flooding. On a recent night, as I stood in rain on the center span of the steel pedestrian bridge, about 20 feet above a dark, raging torrent of Monument Creek's muddy water, a passerby stopped to observe with me and commented about how amazingly fast the water had come up. I quickly agreed and said, 'Yeah, my buddy and I have been here a while watching it, and you should have seen it. It went from just ankle deep to chest high in a matter of seconds.' After seeing my yellow safety vest, he asked if I was with the City Works or other agency. I said, 'No, we're just a bunch of ham radio operators who volunteer our time to the county. were actually with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. I went on to explain there were similar flash flood spotter teams strategically placed throughout the county watching streams rise and then using our radios to report our observations back to the EOC. He said, "It's great to know someone's out there watching our backs." He then turned and extended his hand to shake mine and said, "Nice to meet someone on the front lines." He thanked me for being there and then went on his way. I must say I wore a proud smile as I walked back across the bridge in the drizzle, realizing that, yep, that's what we do all right. We're out there watching our community's back while they sleep, watch TV, and live their lives. It sure felt great, and it meant a lot to be paid a huge unsolicited thanks, especially from someone who probably is sleeping a little better tonight, knowing that someone has his back. Tips: DIY equipment labeling. Rick Herndon, K5FNI in Mathis, Texas, who is an ARRL Life member and an official emergency station, suggests, "Here's an interesting do-it-yourself or DIY project for labeling your equipment with tape. This tape should be fairly permanent if you use pop rivets to fasten it to something. It seems to me like it would make a good equipment ID for when you have to take expensive stuff into the field during emergency exercises, field day, or actual emergencies. Several locals swear by E6000 glue as an alternative for application of the labels." Training, ARRL courses updated. The former Amateur Radio Emergency Communications, or AREC, series of three levels of emergency communications courses has been reconfigured into two new courses. They are an introductory course for radio amateurs who want to volunteer to provide services for public service and emergency communications, and a course for leaders and managers who are responsible for training and coordinating response efforts. The course descriptions for both of these courses that make up the ARRL's ARES training program can be found in the ARRL online course catalog. The URL is www.arrl.org/online-course-catalog. Links to register for each course are included in the course descriptions. Well, it's time again to take a short pause to allow repeaters to identify. This is the audio version of the ARRL ARES e-letter for July 11th, 2012. And now, Rick Palm, K1CE, for a final. The ARRL headquarters sends regular and current notices of interest to disaster response communicators via Twitter. Follow the ARRL's MCOM News on Twitter @ARRL_MCOM with no spaces. Again, that's @ARRL_MCOM with no spaces. Mr. Palm says, "I am also active on Twitter. Follow @K1CE with no spaces." That's @K1CE and no spaces. Keep cool. And 73, Rick, K1CE in Daytona Beach, Florida. And that's the ARES audio e-letter for July 11th, 2012. The ARES audio e-letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The ARES audio e-letter is a voice version of the ARRL ARES e-letter compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE. To learn more about amateur radio, or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit ARRL.org on the World Wide Web. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. Thanks for listening, and 73. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2012 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved.